Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program that addresses regional and national issues from a Central Coast perspective. This program addresses the need for change, its consequences, and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. Chris Kington Barker is your host today, joined by her guests, Nancy Ballinger, retired licensed marriage family therapist and author of Two Brave Cubs, Finding Help When Children Grieve, and Dr. Orquita Fausto, Ph.D., trainer and consultant. They're going to be discussing a significantly heavy topic today. Since November is Children's Grief Awareness Month, they're going to be focusing on raising awareness about the needs of grieving children and the importance of providing support for them. We encourage you to join our conversation today and ask your questions or bring your comments into our show by calling us today at 805-781-3875. And with that, let's join Chris and her guest. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. According to the Childhood Bereavement Estimation Model, or the CBE, an estimated 700,000 children in the U.S. under the age of 18 experienced the death of a parent in 2020 and 2021 combined. During 2021, one in eight of those deaths was due to COVID. It's astounding when we start reflecting back on just how much has happened in the last 5 years in change. November is Children's Grief Awareness Month, and today's guests, Nancy Ballinger, joining me today in studio, and Dr. Orquita Fausto is joining me by phone from Fresno, will share how they've collaborated to help adults in supporting grieving children. We'll also be talking about how current social, political, and environment losses are having an impact on our youth. Grief manifests differently in young children, and a children's book about grief has served as a shared narrative informing both kids and adults by normalizing complex emotions in an accessible way. And I want to thank you both for being here. Orquita, thank you for joining us by phone. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am so excited to share this space with you.
Oh, thank you. And Nancy, once again, you know, it's lovely to share the space with you, too.
Thank you.
And, you know, for we've done a little bit about this before when we've talked about the book, but I would love to have you just share, you know, what was it that started you down this path of wanting to write this book, and share a little bit about how we get here.
Sure, I would love to. And thank you so much, Chris, for having me here. Yeah. So the way that this all came to pass was that I was a children's grief and bereavement counselor at Hospice of San Luis Obispo for 4 years. And during that time, I was just so touched. And it changed my life, working with grieving children and their families. I could have never expected how that would all go. Then I was working with a particular family at the time, and I had noticed that there were so few books for children grieving, and the power of storytelling we all know about. And so I decided to write a story for this particular family where the children could see themselves and the adults could see themselves, because they were really struggling. And so I sat down and wrote a little story just for this family, for these two children and their father, and shared it with the family. And after sharing it with the family, the little girl said, that's just like our mama. It was their mama who had died. And so that gave me the incentive to move forward with this whole idea of writing a story for the adults, for the children, that wasn't a 300-page book for adults about children's grief, or a Betty Crocker family.
Right.
For those of you who don't know what a Betty Crocker family is, right, it's a white family, middle class, that would really speak to children's grief, that so they knew they were seen and heard.
Yeah, yeah. And this family was a family that was grieving a mom who died.
Right.
From?
She had been dealing with substance abuse since before they were born.
Yeah. So this was, you know, this was something that was a difficult thing for people to grieve and talk about openly with other people.
Right, right. And the father was so hurt and so angry and had so much of his own woundedness mm-hmm. through the years that he insisted no one talk about this.
Right.
Of course, everybody talked about it. All the adults talked about it, but nobody talked to the children about mm-hmm. losing their mother.
Yeah. And the book is, it's a small book, but it's beautifully illustrated mm-hmm. by two local artists.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the book uses lion cubs.
Right.
Why
right.
did you choose lion cubs?
I chose lion cubs because I know that the children have such a relationship with the animal kingdom. This, and I did this before Lion King. I didn't know that. That they were going to take my story and redo it and make it into a big story. So the lion cubs can be a unhoused family. It can be a rich family. It can be a poor family. It can be anyone of any nationality or any group. And so that was really, really important to me. It was also extremely important to me that everything we did from the beginning was in English and Spanish. I didn't want that to be an afterthought.
Yeah.
And so a little bit about the story was that I did write this story. I shared it with a family. And as I said, they really related to it. And then I just kind of set it aside. It was just a story I had written for them. I never intended for it to be a published book. And then many years later, 25, 30 years later, my friend Lena Thomas, who has recently passed away from, invited me to write a children's story that Coalesce Press could publish. And I said, I have a children's story, and then it has taken off from then. That was in 2018, I think, that first came up. So this has been my passion in my retirement, is to give back to all those families, all those children who taught me so much about myself, about life, about love, about death, about hope. It just goes on and on. They taught me more than I could ever express.
And you didn't want a book that just sat on the shelf. So what did you end up doing with it?
Bingo, yeah. So after we had the book published, we... one day, I was just sitting and thinking about a friend of mine, Melinda, who had volunteered at hospice when I was there at hospice working with the children. And I just kind of looked her up online and saw that she is a division director for CAPSLO, or Kedia may be able to correct me on that. And so I just... had tea with her and showed her the book, and she said, I want this for my staff and I want this for all the families. And it began. And so I shared it at a large pre-service training. And there were just so many people who came forward to help with everything. And I hope
this was for what organization?
CAPSLO.
CAPSLO.
Oh, did I not say CAPSLO?
I don't think so.
CAPSLO. And maybe Orchidia can give us a little overview of CAPSLO.
Yeah. Orchidia, can you talk a little bit about how CAPSLO saw the use of this book and how it's been utilized?
Yes, thank you, Nancy. That was such a beautiful introduction to this this powerful and impactful project. Nancy and I actually met through Melinda, who is the division director of Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo. And you're right, Nancy. Melinda said, this is such a beautiful story. I want it for the children and families that CAPSLO serves. So CAPSLO, I used to work for them. I was actually... with them from 2010 to 2022. And I was the family child care program manager in my last role there, and we serviced about 1,000 children in the family child care program. And Nancy and I worked on a conference together to provide the book and a training on how to properly use the book for family child care providers. Mm. And that was about 200 family child care providers. Mm. So you're talking about thousands of children all in ones, right? And families. It was such a powerful way to be able to bring such a difficult topic and make it approachable, make it a topic that would help adults be able to have this conversation with children and with fellow parents that worked with them. In fact, Nancy, if you remember the very first training we did, we had adults crying because they had lost people when they were children and nobody talked to them about it. So as adults, they were still feeling the grief of loss, or a parent had left the house, not necessarily through death, but just had left their space. So they were also feeling that grief. And we had such a powerful conversation in a group of 100 adults about how it's always a good time to have an honest, serious conversation with the people that you love about this process that is so delicate. That's how Nancy and I started working together. But let me just give you, if I can, 2 minutes of what Capsule does for the community.
Yes.
So Capsule serves in various spaces. They have services with Head Start funds, and that's migrant and seasonal Head Start, early Head Start, and regional Head Start through, oh my gosh, last time I was there, I think it was 9 or 10 different counties in Central California, going from San Diego up to San Joaquin County. And so they serve children both in a family child care program, in a center-based program, actually in three services, and a home-based program. They also have homeless shelters, weatherization, other community organizations that support San Luis Obispo County. They're also working with the Resource and Referral Agency there in San Luis Obispo. So it's part of the community of CAPS Loves community services. So they are just a wealth of resources for communities, not only in San Luis Obispo, but in the Central Valley.
We often think of CAPSLO just being here in the Central Coast area. It's really expanded.
And there's such a wonderful organization.
Yes.
Passionate people that really to wake up every morning with a goal of serving their community, serving the people that they support, and supporting each other within the organization. Mm-hmm. I am just in awe with their leadership and their vision and mission and how they live through that every single day. So I am definitely where I'm at because I was part of CAPSLO.
That's fantastic.
So I will always and forever be grateful to them.
That's a good plug, Orchidia. Good plug. So with the collaboration with you, does that continue? Are the books continuing to be used? And
they are.
So when you did the training, how is it that this book, how were you teaching for people to use the book? Are there certain parts of the book that you would pull out to show people how would you use the book with a child?
We actually just did a training at the State Head Start Conference, which was really exciting.
That's impressive.
Yeah, we did one in English, and then Orchidia did one in Spanish.
Fantastic.
90-minute presentations, and it was just beautiful. But anyway, the way that so a beautiful person at Capslow named Crystal Reisner took all of the beautiful pictures mm-hmm. from this book and put them into slides. And so what we do is we start off our training with I read the book in English or Kitty if she's in Spanish. So we started off from the very beginning very heart-centered. All of the trainings are just extremely heart-centered. And yet at the same time, our goal is to educate the adults about children's grief. So from the very beginning, we acknowledge that children are the forgotten grievers. And it's through no one's intention that this happens, but people don't know how to talk to children, don't want to make things worse for children. And so it's with the best of intentions, right, of course, that happens. And so we go then through the story and identify each of the characters and how they demonstrate different pieces, different qualities of a grieving family. So the daughter is out punching people because she's so angry that her mother had died and she doesn't have a mother like everybody else. And Tosh, the little brother in the story, is very withdrawn and more withdrawn and very sad. And the father says, I don't know how to help my children. I think I make things worse. And so all of this story is going on from the very beginning, where the cubs at the very beginning. Let me just read the very first page.
Let me take just a real mm-hmm. quick break, because you had mentioned, too, that the little girl mm-hmm. saw herself
yes.
in the cubs.
Yes.
That's great.
Immediately.
Look for that part, and we'll be right back. I'm Chris Kington-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. A big shout-out to all of you who make that possible with your donations and support. My guest today, and the voices you're hearing with me, are Nancy Ballinger, retired LMFT and children's grief therapist, an author of Two Brave Cubs, Finding Help When Children Grieve, and Dr. Orcadia Frausto, PhD, trainer and consultant. TwoLittleCubs.com is the website to learn more about Nancy's book and to see it.
Two Brave Cubs.
Two Brave Cubs. Excuse me. I did that again.
Yeah.
TwoBraveCubs.com. And our number is 805-781-3875 to bring your questions and your comments into our discussion. So, Nancy, you mm-hmm. were going to read something from the book.
I was going to start with the very first page of the book, and I was going to also share the last page of the book.
Great.
Because the purpose of telling the stories to children is for them to be able to see themselves in it and to see how they progress and succeed at the end. So the very first page is a beautiful picture of the African savanna, and we have two lion cubs there. Once upon a time, two lion cubs lived on the African savanna with their parents. Tosh and Sasha were brave cubs and had learned to take care of themselves and each other. Yet they thought no one loved them.
Mm.
And the story progresses that the mother is very ill. And so in this story, it was because of addiction, but all the things that go along with it. But the mother could have been depressed, or the mother could have had cancer, or the mother mm-hmm. could, in any number, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
It matters that the mother's not available to the children, and so they've had to grow up and be parentified
right.
when they're just little lion cubs.
Yeah.
And so we see the story progress to where the little cubs one day wake up to hearing voices saying, their mother has died. Their mother has died. And that is how they find out the monkeys and the zebras and all the other animals are talking about their mother dying because no one has told them.
Nobody's talking to them. They're having to overhear.
Exactly.
Which often happens with children.
Yes.
Because people are thinking if they pull them into the conversation, how do I express it? It's better that they don't. Yeah.
Yeah. And all the concerns, right. You know, that go along right. with that. But that's so frightening for children.
Yeah.
Because this is their whole life. You know, we're going to talk later about the difference between adult grief and children's
right.
grief. But children's grief, this is their whole life, their parents, their family, their home.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's all been taken away from
right.
them, and they don't know what they're going to do. So we go through the story, and that everybody is feeling like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And an elephant arrives on the savannah named Amari, and she sits down with the children and talks to them and helps the dad. So I'm giving you the summary because at the very end, the last page in the story, so remember at the beginning, they're feeling like nobody loves them. A gentle breeze off the river ruffled Sasha and Tasha's fur. The cubs felt hope in their heart. They knew they had been very brave, that they were lovable and loved and were no longer alone.
Hmm.
And so the story is it's just a journey of love and hope.
Yeah.
That it looks terrible at the beginning. They're all alone. And then life unfolds. It becomes more difficult. And then help arrives, and the family utilizes that help. And so it shows the family how to use Amari and what Amari says. So it's very specific, but it's pictures of this elephant sitting down with these little cubs, talking to them and saying, it's not your fault, and you're not alone anymore. And the beauty of it is, and I think what makes it really unique, is that It's real life.
It's relatable.
It's relatable.
Yeah.
You know, Mama didn't, in the beginning, Sasha, the little girl, is hungry, and the mama can't make lunch for her, can't make food for her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents have disagreements, and it's...
And Dad's not available.
Right. Dad leaves for work and is gone for long periods of time, and when he comes home, the parents... have a hard time.
Well, and the other thing is nobody's a bad person.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there doesn't have to be, some kind of a villain in this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about, Arcadia, I want you to feel free really to jump in from the perspective of some of the clients that you've worked with, or some of the different situations that you've seen in families that have been served, in the populations that you've worked with as well. Let's talk about for different age groups, you know, with children, they're going to show, or grief is going to be manifested in different ways for them. Like we've stated at the mm-hmm. beginning, they're not little adults.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, they don't. For instance, these two children displayed their grief very differently.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that, you know, how do children respond to grief? And that is different at different ages.
One thing I'd like to start off with is that everyone grieves differently, whether it's adults or children.
True.
It is a universal
regardless
fact of
what age you are.
Regardless of what age you are. so grief is universal. It's the natural way of healing. That's not something that needs to be diagnosed or fixed. It's just something that needs to be acknowledged and supported in different ways. And so I think that's really important that we acknowledge that there's not a cookie cutter way you know, certainly.
And grief is a response to a loss. I mean,
yes.
We're talking about death right now because
that's what
this book is about.
Right.
But grief is a response to loss, and we're going to be talking about a lot of different kinds of losses.
Mm-hmm. And how it kind of snowballs.
Yeah.
From one loss to another loss to another loss
right.
to another.
So let's talk about different ages.
Okay.
What do you see as a person who's working with children of different ages? What are things that you look for that parents often get really confused by or family members get confused by?
Well, there's different types of grief that I'd like to just talk about real quickly now. And that is just the grief that we can kind of define, like young children become more clingy, they revert to old behaviors, they don't sleep at night, they have nightmares, they're processing the loss at an age appropriate, in an age appropriate way. But then there's also more complicated grief, and I think maybe we can talk about that later in the program, where we really need to, you know, get more help for the children. So could I just tell you stories of three different situations in my own family?
Yeah. We're going to take a break in a few minutes, but please do.
You want me to tell you first?
Yeah.
Okay. quickly, I realized this morning that these are all three in my family. One is my grandniece, and she's 3 years old. And it was at the memorial for her grandma. That was my sister-in-law. She had passed away. And Viola is her name. And Viola was just sitting on a step by herself. And I went over and I sat down beside her. And she looked at me and she said, "My Titi died." And I said, "I know, Viola. And you loved her, I know, so much. And she loved you." And Viola, full of big crocodile tears, shakes her head. And then she jumps up and runs off.
That's outburst
very,
in the moment.
Mm-hmm. It was that very appropriate that young children, and that's probably maybe up to the age of 5, 6, they're really into talking about it, and then all of a sudden they see something that they want to go do, and that's normal.
And I've seen children do that at funerals.
Yes.
And even at open casket where there's a funeral. That there's, you know, there's a moment where there, you know, I had my grandson threw himself on the coffin and then was okay.
Yeah. And so just embracing them and allowing them to do, as long as there's not harming themselves, you know, but just letting them be little kids because they are little kids. Mm-hmm. Then the next one is my grandnephew Grayson, who is now 9 years old, and he, my sister's was his grandma. My sister Lynn died, and he came and visited us for a little while just recently. So it'd been 4 years since his grandma died, and she'd been one of the primary caretakers. Anyway, Grayson and I made cookies and talked about how his Nana loved cookies and loved baking and how he would bake with her. And so he could really drop into it because he was 9 and there was a venue there. We were making cookies.
Yeah.
We were doing something. We weren't just saying, "Well, Grayson, how have you been since your Nana died?
How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it?"
Yeah.
But he was talking about it through storytelling
and
through memories.
Right. And that's something we can do is tell stories about the person because we knew her when she was a little girl. Or she and I used to go for walks or, you know, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the third person is my 15-year-old granddaughter who we did it on FaceTime because that's
that's what
that's
you
do.
We do
it.
Yeah
right. And she was just going through the grief of the breakup of the very first love of her life. And so she was able to, I just listened and we looked at each other and that was all she needed to be able to share her grief.
Yeah.
And so
those are great examples of mm-hmm. when it's age appropriate and how they how it's very, very different. Very different people
mm-hmm.
and different yeah. ages.
And it's so important for us to follow their lead, to let them teach us, for us not to go in with an agenda of how we're going to help them fix their grief so that we can feel better.
I love that because parents get so, and adults get so caught up with children mm-hmm. about, I don't know how I can go in to do this and have them feel okay about mm-hmm. kids. Kids take care of themselves really well if you let them do that, right?
If we listen to them.
Yeah, if we listen to them.
Yeah. Oh,
what a concept. I'm going to take a break right now, mm-hmm. send this back over to you, Brad, and we'll be right back.
It's our 50th anniversary on the air, and KCBX listeners are sharing the love.
My name is Bob Clark. KCBX has programming for every part of your brain, the intellectual part, the emotional part, and the moving and grooving part. There is something for every part of your brain, and anytime you want. The DJs are great. They're local. They're really knowledgeable. They have so much institutional knowledge about music. And it's fascinating to listen to them interject in between songs. And the songs they pick out are also just fabulous. Things I would never do on my own. It's been a great part of the community. They seem to know a lot about what's going on around here, and they keep us informed. It's just a great radio station. I'm really glad it's been around. You know, I really love donating to KCBX. I think my money goes far when I donate to KCBX.
Show your support with a donation at kcbx.org.
Hola, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Every Thursday afternoon at 2, you can hear Latino USA on KCBX. Latino USA is a Peabody Award-winning radio journal of news and culture from a Latino-Latina perspective. It chronicles how we're living, shaping, and changing the United States of America. Tune in for in-depth reporting, candid conversations, and fascinating stories. Join me for Latino USA Thursdays from 2 to 3 on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
That's a look ahead. On our Thursday here on KCBX, Latino USA is coming up following this program at 2. That's followed by Fresh Air at 3 and then Marketplace at 4. Right now, with our phone lines open at 805-781-3875, let's return to Chris Kington Barker and her guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. My guests today are Nancy Ballinger, retired LMFT and children's grief therapist and author of Two Brave Cubs, Finding Help When Children Grieve, and Dr. Arcadia Frausto, who is a trainer and a consultant. And we are talking about children's grief, and we're going to be talking about children's grief and kind of expanding that a little bit in this next half hour when we talk about children's grief and loss. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more about the fact that children's loss, not only is November Children's Grief Awareness Month, but when we talk about grief awareness, what we're also talking about some of the research that's been done that confirms that significant trauma and anxiety and depression among children has really started to come out about what is happening in our mm-hmm. lives politically and here with immigration issues, mm-hmm. with, you know, children being aware of their own parents' stress mm-hmm. and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And Arcadia, I want to bring you in to talk a little bit about, you know, how this is affecting some of what you're seeing in the work that you're doing and what your thoughts about this are.
Yes, thank you. You're right. It is something that, especially with the migrant community, it's a threat and fear. Our political situation, I would call it, and just the fear surrounding it. So when Nancy and I have presented together is one of the things that come up amongst early care and education educators is how do I best have conversations with parents and how can I be aware of children's emotions so that I can support, right? And one of the things that Head Start does so brilliantly is observation. And you're constantly observing children, their behaviors, and you get to know them, their strengths, right? What's normal or what's more commonly their personalities, their attitudes. And when you observe something that is off, then you start having these conversations. Hey, and one of the great things about the book is that it talks about two very different but very common ways of dealing with grief. There's either isolation or challenging behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. So we are able to have a conversation not only with children but with adults about their children's behavior and how to best support them with whatever is happening at home. Earlier we talked about you don't have to go through the physical loss of someone, right? Death, also if they're no longer in the home. And children, sometimes we don't sit down with them and just talk to them about what's happening. They get the aftermath, right? They get the outcome of the situation. But as humans, we always make these horrible scenarios in our minds. So children do as well. When they don't know what happens, they fill in the blanks. And that can be a scary process. So that's why it is so important to be in tune with our children's behavior and have conversations that are going to support their feelings and help them deal with the situation the best way possible. In one of the instances that Nancy and I presented, we had a educator come up and tell us about a story where the child's dad was deported back to their home country, and nobody would talk to him about it. So, but he was hearing all the adults having conversations about it, but there was no direct conversation with him. And this is often scenarios that we experience in the field.
There are so many mixed families where the child may be a citizen here, but a parent may be undocumented, or one parent may be undocumented. And, you know, as we talk about children at different ages processing differently, when children are of a certain age and they don't understand loss, they don't understand a parent who disappears. They may not die. It may be they disappear because they've died. It may be they disappear because they've left the family. They, you know, as you've discussed, if they fill in the gaps, can they not fill in the gaps with it, something they've done that has created that?
Exactly. Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about
that? Yeah.
Well, as adults, we sometimes do this. If I would have done this, if I would have done that.
Exactly.
But we're adults, and we eventually have some idea that...
Well, we have people that will talk us out of
right,
that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
They talk to us.
Right, right. But with children, they magical thinking, especially younger children.
Yeah.
But that goes on for quite some time. And again, if adults are not talking to them, they make up a story inside their head. So Sasha is the girl cub and Tosh is the boy cub in this story. And Sasha and Tosh, at one point in the story, are pretty fed up with their parents.
With the remaining parent?
No, with the two parents.
With the two parents.
Yeah, it was early on. And they wish that they would just go away so that they could have a good mama and papa like the lions. I mean, like the tigers and the monkeys and mm-hmm. the giraffes, you know. And so they're having this little conversation, and Tasha's going to tell them, don't you ever send me to my room again. And Sasha saying, I'm going to eat out of the trees as a giraffe. So they put together this whole fantasy world of how wonderful it'll be if they don't have these parents.
Right.
And then lo and behold, their mother dies. And it's gone, right. And then the dad is gone, too, because mm-hmm. of that. And so this page speaks to that. They miss their mama most late at night, lying in the tall grass, looking at the shining stars, sheltered by the savanna sky. They wondered why she'd gone away. Had she gone because they were bad, or because they had been mad at her and wished she would go away, so they could have a good mama like the zebra and monkeys?
Yeah, so this book really goes to the different levels mm-hmm. that kids go to.
And it's very simply stated.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, well, some children think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's one of the things that makes this unique, yeah. was because I spent so many years in my private practice, but primarily at hospice working with young children, and so, we weren't talking. We were playing together. We
right.
were shooting baskets. We were making cookies, whatever,
right.
you know. And so, I know the emotions
yeah.
that children had. They shared them with me.
Yeah, and Arcadia with, you know, the anxiety around immigration issues, the anxiety around deportation, it's got to have a tremendous amount of stress on the family, on the adults as well, which has got to change their behavior as well toward the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see a kid saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of being around my parent who's angry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Arcadia? I think we may have lost Arcadia.
Okay. Well, I can
okay.
pick it up. Because something that it is also very, very normal is that they begin worrying that their other parent is going to die, or that their other parent is going to be deported,
right.
or that they won't have a home anymore, or they... They hear the adults talking. The TV's going on
exactly
all day. And so even though we may think we're protecting them from it.
And they see the news.
They see
they
the news.
They hear the news.
And adults are
children
talking.
Children talk
kids.
In
yes.
school.
Yes. And so they become more and more anxious. And they truly believe that no one will understand how they're feeling because they don't know that there are other children who are in the same situation, or other families maybe even that are in the same situation. So they keep it all locked up inside.
With some of the work that you've been doing with CAPSLO
mm-hmm.
and some of the migrant, some of the staff that are working with the migrant
yeah.
families,
yeah.
are they using the book to talk about those circumstances as well, to open doorways and have those conversations?
I believe so. I can't say absolutely yes, Chris. I know they are.
Yeah.
But I believe they are because
yeah,
they were...
It sounds like a natural fit.
They were so involved with the mm-hmm. trainings, as Arcadia was talking about. And it is, and we've always talked about that there are many kinds
right.
of loss.
Right.
And we've... Yeah. So I feel certain that this is a much-needed vehicle because everybody's doing the best they can.
Yeah, that's...
You know? And so the parents have so much, or the caretakers, or whomever, have so much that they're dealing with that they might not even be aware of how fearful. But once again, if we listen to them... And so another little story about a niece of mine during 9/11. She was at our house, and we just took out some paper and crayons, and she drew a picture of the towers burning and the airplanes, and she was only like 6 years old, but she had seen all of that. And so when I talk about listening to them, listening to how they're acting, listening to what they're showing us, how they're playing, that's how we can be there for them, is just being there for them.
Yeah.
And them knowing that there's maybe something, not something we can immediately do to help with this, but we really understand that they're worried.
So what do you suggest for parents who feel awkward and don't know how to start those conversations, don't know how to hear, mm-hmm. how to listen?
Mm-hmm. One way is for parents to be honest, to still be the grown-ups, whether it's whatever caretaker it is, to be honest and to say, I'm just feeling sad today, or I'm feeling curious about what's going to happen. It's starting to give them some words and modeling for them that this is big. This is a big deal that we're going through as a family now. And giving them some words, maybe, how are you feeling? Can you show me a dance? Show me a dance and show me how you're feeling. And
okay.
It could be a punch in the pillows dance, or it could be a very sad dance, or giving them, having paper and pencil available for them, paper, you know, pens, mm-hmm. whatever. And that worked so often for me when I was working with children. And then, like I said, with my own family, giving them other ways besides sitting down and talking. I was much younger at the time. I used to go with a little girl who would want to roller skate down by hospice. We would go outside and she'd roller skate down, and I'd try to keep up with her. And she would every now and then just tell me how mad she was about this, or how stupid everybody was or something. But I went to her level,
right,
instead of expecting her to please sit down and
yeah.
tell me,
let's
what
talk
what
about
are you
it.
So upset about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay too. But they just need to know. They're called the forgotten grievers. Mr. Rogers talks about forgotten grievers and how what children really need the most. And excuse me. And this could be the takeaway today, is that children just need for us to be available to them.
So what if a parent is grieving themselves? What if an adult is mm-hmm. grieving themselves?
Or the teacher is grieving
yeah.
themselves, or
yeah.
the child care provider
right. so
is grieving
so what about that?
Themselves.
Oh, is Arcadia back?
I am.
Oh,
this
welcome
is for
back.
Arcadia.
We missed you.
I don't know what happened. That is such a good question about, you know, what if the parent or the adult is grieving? And it has so much to do also with the culture and how the
yes.
family culture or the community usually sees loss. And that's, you know, if a parent has just, it's no longer in the same space as the child, or they have actually passed away. So that has a lot to do with it as well.
Can you explain what that means, Arcadia? Give me an example.
So, for example, in one of the situations that Nancy and I experienced, the child, the adult now, that shared with us, when she experienced her grandmother passing, all the children were just put in a room, and they were told, you just wait here, and nothing was told to them about what was happening. They were hearing people crying and mourning the loss of their mother, but the children were not told. So in their family, that was very common, where children were not told what was happening with the loss, if somebody had passed or somebody had left. And so that's a cultural aspect, right? So it's
yeah.
just mm-hmm. a way that some people deal with death.
Right.
And so that has the effect on the child, and now even to adulthood. The example that I'm sharing, Nancy and I were there, and the educator was crying herself, and she was still till this day mourning. So that was a very impactful experience for us to see that after so many years, there was still pain associated because the way that the family's culture saw death was not honoring children's perspective, right? So that has to do with it. And when we're talking about adults and loss, I mean, really is how they are taught to have these difficult conversations. I know Nancy talked a little bit about her family experiences, so if I may just have 1 minute.
Yes.
Since I have two daughters, and since they were very young, I talked to them about what happens if something happens to me, what would happen if something happens to Dad, what happens if something happens to both of us. And at the beginning, it was such a difficult conversation. They didn't want to hear it. They would, you know, my youngest one would get upset. And, but, you know, I would start talking to them again and talk to them again as I felt like they were being more mature and being very careful with the way that they were responding to me. And now my youngest is 17. And we can have a full-blown conversation of what would happen, right? Who would they go contact? What, you know, the finances, what that looks like. A very different approach than a lot of Hispanic families. In a lot of Hispanic families, we don't usually talk about death. So having these open, honest conversations, depending on your children's maturity level, can be helpful, and but also reflective of the family culture.
Yes, and for families where talking about death just isn't a natural circumstance, is it possible that that's where the book comes in, because they don't have to do something that doesn't come naturally? There's a conversation through the story that kind of evolves, right?
Yes, and the beauty is that this book can be used for all ages. And for children that are very young, the mom or the caregiver can put their own words into the pictures. The book is beautifully illustrated, so they can put their own words to be able to help the child understand at their level. And as the child is older and more mature, obviously they can actually read the book, but have a conversation with them. It's a conversation starter of such a delicate topic.
Right, and this isn't one conversation,
right?
No. So it's it's just an ongoing discussion that is little bitty baby steps. Mm-hmm. It's like you're talking about the little girl that you would run behind or run beside while she was roller skating. It's just a conversation that's evolving and. It's like you were mentioning, Nancy, is follow the child's lead. It's where do they want to go? Do you want to show me through dance how you feel today? And kids are great at showing you in the moment what they're feeling like, and they may feel different 5 minutes later.
Right.
And you'll get a whole different dance.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Depending on the age of the kid.
Right.
So,
and how open an adult has to be to that, and in tune, right, to the child's emotions, and be that safe place for them to go to when they need it.
Nancy, were you?
Yeah, I'm opening up the book.
Okay.
I do want to say thank you, Orchidia. That was beautiful. I do want to say that. Many adults have told me that this book made all the difference in their life. So the dedication, the book is dedicated. This book is dedicated to brave cubs of all ages who have suffered the loss of a parent. May you feel seen, heard, understood, and most of all, loved. Mm. I did a presentation for a hospice, and the chaplain was, it was an online thing, but the chaplain at the end said, "You just told the story of my life. When I was a little boy, my mom died. Nobody would talk about it. I went through years and years and years. And you just acknowledged, affirmed, and helped me to understand what happened, that mm-hmm. everybody wasn't a bunch of bad guys, that everybody was doing their thing, but they didn't hear me, and they didn't see me, and they didn't affirm me,
right.
and you just did." And I've heard that so many times from people, that the healing is beginning now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it is a lifetime process. Every time a child graduates from high school, they're now a teenager, and their mom's not there, and then they get married, and their parent isn't there because dad left and never came back.
Right.
And on and on and on.
Yeah, yeah. And all of this is in advance of Children's Grief Week or mm-hmm. month. Grief Awareness Month.
Yeah. Excuse me.
So there is so much available on the website to for anybody that wants to explore what they can do for more advanced grief, reaching out to some of the professional groups.
Right, right. And that is something that's very different from when I was doing training. When I was working with children, is there are wonderful websites that if you go to twobravecubs.com, we have resources for all many, many links where you can get a lot of information, and that's what this is about.
I want to thank my guests today, Nancy Ballinger, and author of Two Brave Cubs, Finding Help When Children Grieve, and Dr. Arcadia Fausto, PhD, trainer and consultant. Next week, La Muerte will be here with her guests from the city of Guadalupe. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for being a KCBX listener, supporter, and for joining us on Central Coast Voices.